Should we make this a rush order? Well, should I load it up for you? Do you want the 5-year or the 10-year extended warranty? Will that be a check or a credit card? Hey, how do you feel when a salesperson asks you to buy their product? Are you offended? Does it turn you off? Does it make you defensive or even mad? Or do you think, well, that's what they're supposed to do? They're the salesperson. It's their job to sell. And do you also feel it shows their confidence in their product? That they expect that you'd want to own it? Now, of course, there's no way for me to know for sure how you feel about being asked to buy something. But I do know one thing about you. How you personally feel about buying will most likely determine how you sell and how you ask your prospects to buy. If you love to sell and you love to close, then most likely you love to be sold and to buy. As you know, in order to close effectively, you need to know how to read your prospect and then sell them the way they want to buy. To sell John Smith what John Smith buys, you must see through John Smith's eyes or Ted Lamb's eyes. Who's Ted Lamb? A salesman. One great salesman who loves to sell and, yes, who loves almost as much to observe how others sell him. Ted sells lots of things, cars, trucks, airplanes, manufacturing items, real estate, and lots more. Now, he owns all the businesses he's selling for. He owns a car dealership, an aviation company that sells aircraft, a manufacturing plant, has built and owns a hotel, owns a title company. I mean, he's very successful and a great guy. But most of all, Ted loves to close. And Ted Lamb, being a sales professional for over 4 decades, says that he's personally offended when a salesperson makes a presentation to him and doesn't close. Unfortunately, there are some salespeople who simply don't close or ask for the order. And as a result, they may be limiting their effectiveness greatly. Selling professionally means that you know when to stop talking and ask for the decision to invest. And you know how to do it without fear, without fumbling, and without fail. In fact, you should act as if you could not fail. And as we said before, selling is really helping. And for that reason, it should be helpful to your prospect when you close. What has your experience taught you? Isn't it possible that a prospect is actually relieved when you make it easy to say yes? Well, I think so. I'm sure more comfortable when professional salespeople close and make it easy for me to say yes, because closing proves 2 things. First, that the salesperson is sold on his own product. And second, that he's convinced, based on his knowledge and expertise, that I need it and will benefit from it too. Remember, your prospect makes the final decision, not you. Closing professionally, then, is simply a matter of settling the details and making it easy for your prospect to decide to invest. Your job is really to help your prospect close himself. Now, here's an experience that illustrates this point vividly. I've used it for years in my live seminars. Pretty soon after Judy and I moved to Scottsdale, Arizona, one of our air conditioning units broke down and needed to be replaced. I called the large national chain where we had bought many appliances and asked them to send out their best salesperson. Hey, always ask for the best, the professional who knows how to fill your needs and solve your problems. That evening, Ray came over at the appointed time. He looked and acted like a professional. He was well-dressed. His sales and demonstration kit was neat and well-organized. After an attention-getting statement about his almost 20 years with the company, I felt more comfortable. I mean, obviously, he was a professional. And we were in capable hands. He took out a pad and said, "Now I need some information, folks. Is it okay if I ask you a couple of questions and jot down some of the information?" Oh, wow, was I impressed. I mean, he was prepared, he got our attention, and now he was qualifying. He had a final presentation, just like the one we discussed earlier. His questions went something like this. "How long have you lived here? How old is that unit on the roof that's broken down now? What tonnage is it?" Now, I hesitated there because I really didn't know. And he quickly followed up with, "Well, a lot of people really don't know the tonnage or the size. I'll go up and check in a few minutes." He then continued, "When your unit was working, did it cool the house and make it comfortable?" Oh, he qualified perfectly. You would have loved it. Now remember, study sales presentations that way. Keep looking for new and better ways to sell. Whenever you're a prospect, make an outline of the sales presentation used on you. Identify its strengths and weaknesses. And ask yourself, if I was selling that product, how would I have presented it? Now let's stop a minute and think back to message number 2, where we discussed the 10 building blocks. Let's review them based on Ray's presentation, and let's rate him on a scale of 1 to 10. First, the foundation, preparation. Oh, yes. Ray was prepared. He knew his product, he had his support materials, and he was ready to do business. I'd rate him a 10 on preparation. Then building block number one, the pre-approach. That was a solid 10, too, because Judy and I had already been customers of his company, and we asked him to call on us. Next, building block number two, the approach. How Ray looked and sounded at our front door, and how he arrived on time. Again, I'd give him a 10. Building block number three, capturing our attention. Of course, a 10. We had no air conditioning. I mean, it was 100 degrees. You bet he had our attention. And as for building block number four, the vital qualifying block, once again, I'd give him a 10. He knew how to ask good questions. He asked permission. He had a checklist. He kept his questions easy. And his questions got him the information he needed. He didn't answer any of them himself. They were mostly open questions, and he listened and even wrote down our replies. And now the big test. Would he sell us features and facts, or would he present the benefits? Were we going to hear about the drill or the hole? Well, what do you think, based on what you've heard so far? Well, you're right. He sold benefits, and he used evidence. And as a result, Judy and I were sold on Ray. We were sold on his products. And Ray then showed us that based on our needs, we had a couple of options. First, there was a unit on sale that month. Next, he went on to explain about a second unit, a bit larger than we needed, but with a few extra benefits for us. And then he presented a third unit, a brand new, top-of-the-line model with some energy-saving features. So how did Ray do on building blocks 5? Interest, 6, conviction, 7, desire. Yes, yes, yes. Solid 10s again. We were definitely interested. We had a strong conviction that any of the three units Ray showed us would do the job. And we had the desire to solve our problem. See how this building block concept works? Sometimes you do the things necessary to complete the step, and sometimes the prospect does them. But somebody has to do them. Okay, now, building block 9, the action step, closing, asking for the sale. Here's what Ray did. Pointing to the three catalog sheets showing the investment for each of the units he had described, he said, "Okay, that's it." There was a long silence. I thought he was going to close. I mean, this was a difficult decision for us, but I thought, well, Ray's going to help us decide. And we waited, and we waited, and we waited. Finally, I said, "Ray, aren't you going to suggest which one we should get? Ray, help us decide here." He said, "Oh, no." And he went on to explain that he wasn't a high-pressure salesperson. He didn't want to push anybody into buying anything. Ridiculous? Yes. But it's absolutely true. Impossible? No. It happens every day. Salespeople show and tell but fail to sell. Somehow, Ray must have been misled years before to believe that selling was simply showing the product. And unfortunately for the Rays of the world, they can still be somewhat successful. In fact, he was number one in his company's local organization. But the question is, what could he have become if he had known and understood the importance of closing professionally? You know, research has been done in this aspect of selling, and studies keep coming up with similar findings, that in over half the sales presentations made annually, the prospect is never asked to buy anything. It's show and tell, and off they go. But selling is helping. Selling is finding the prospect's need and filling it. So you owe it to your prospects to do everything in your power to help them make the right decision. With a quality product that fills a need or a want, and a solid company to service it, a professional like Ray should do everything in his power to help people invest in it. And the same is true for you. Remember, the prospect makes the final decision. What you do is give the prospect the information they need in an organized and believable way so they can answer those 6 important questions. We covered them earlier. Do I want the product? Do I want this particular one? Do I want to pay the price? Do I want it now? Do I want it from your company? And do I want it from you? So you can see it's your obligation to make it easy for your prospects to say yes. Well, what happened with Ray, the non-closing air conditioning salesman? Well, we closed ourselves and completed building block 9. We played it safe and bought the middle unit. And Ray made it to building block number 10. He went home with the sale. Was it the right unit? Well, we never really knew. It was a unit and it worked. You see, when I started selling way back in 1967, I didn't close either. I was a good product shower and teller. But as for the sale, oh, no way. It offended me. I didn't like to be sold, so I wasn't going to sell others. I was just like Ray. Now, you might be thinking, Joel, why did you become a salesman? Well, everyone who knew me asked the same question. I mean, I was shy, self-conscious, a construction worker, earning a living with my hands. I mean, it made no sense. And when you listened to the earlier message about 10 to win, you heard how poorly I began. Sure, I didn't have very good prospects. Sure, I wasn't skilled in making a powerful sales presentation. Sure, I had limited product knowledge. But come on, if the 1,200 prospect contacts, the law of averages, would have at least resulted in better than just one sale in 8 weeks. Now, decades later, as I reflect back on those frustrating days, it's obvious that one of the major weaknesses was my lack of understanding about closing. But you also heard that once I developed the 10-to-win system, I went from the worst producing salesperson to number one in an organization of over 1,000 salespeople. There were 5 major factors that made the difference. Number one was listening daily to Earl Nightingale's Stranger Secret message, and then setting a goal and improving my attitude. Second was formulating the 10-to-win concept that inexperienced or low-point salespeople need high-point prospects. And the third factor was understanding the concept of the million-dollar attitude. And you're going to hear more about that on message number 11. Fourth was understanding how the balance scale works. And you're going to hear that concept in the message on responding to objections. And now the fifth factor. It was understanding closing and the concept of the will invest line. Now, what's this will invest line? And how can it help you close even more sales? Well, it's a picture you need to have in your mind, and once you understand it, it will ensure that you close effectively throughout your sales presentation. It would be helpful if you stopped this message now and quickly looked at the Will Invest line illustration in the printed material you received. If it got lost, just give us a call or email us, and we'll send you another one. Now, if you don't have it with you, here's a verbal description. Picture in your mind 4 horizontal lines, say 4 inches long, and 1 inch apart. Now draw in your mind's eye an arch or curved line, starting on the left end of your bottom horizontal line and arching up to a crest just below your top horizontal line. Now turn it and take it down, just below the third line. It looks like the trajectory of a rocket from takeoff to a maximum altitude, then gravity taking over and it kind of heads down again. Now, once you see the printed illustration and listen to this message again, it's going to be much clearer to you. Now, the bottom line represents where your sales presentation begins, ground zero. And just like those small rockets fired by a youngster in elementary school, it goes up, and then it runs out of power, and it gently arches to one side and falls back to earth. The principle of gravity says what goes up must come down. Same with the sales presentation curve. So your bottom horizontal line is where you begin your presentation with your prospect. Now, what powers it up? It's your ability to show the need, the use, and the value of your product. And as you do this, your prospect's interest should be increasing. So the next 3 horizontal lines are all will invest lines, one for each of the 3 different types of prospects. How powerful your sales presentation is will determine how high it can go. For our illustration, let's say it's powerful enough to pass will invest line number 1, will invest line number 2, and falls just short of will invest line number 3. Now let's focus on will invest line number 1, which we're going to call an easy sale. All this means is that for whatever the reason, your prospect doesn't need to see a lot of need, use, and value to make the decision to invest. When Ray sat in our living room showing us those 3 air conditioning units, we were easy sales. We knew his company. Living in Arizona with 100 days a year over 100 degrees, for sure we had to have an air conditioning unit. The old one just couldn't be fixed, so we had to have a new one. And we had the money to buy it. So an easy sale can result when the prospect is already familiar with your product, or when the prospect has a pressing need that requires immediate action, regardless of the dollars and cents involved. Here, just picture yourself as a tire salesperson. You're driving down a desolate road on a stormy night. You see a car on the side of the road with a young family huddled inside. They have no spare to replace their blown-out tire. How much of a sales presentation will be needed to sell them a replacement tire? Well, of course, practically none. I mean, they're stranded. Their need is so great. and they've already reached the Will Invest line the moment you say you have tires for sale. Now, remembering the 10-to-win rating system, how many points would you say this prospect is worth? Well, at least 9. And there are prospects who will decide to invest very quickly based on their need. And you've already met them, haven't you? When your prospect is pre-sold, before you even begin your presentation, it's like a food service salesperson who calls on a major hotel who just had a falling out with their food supplier and needs a new one right away. Or the physician who just came back from a seminar about a newly approved FDA drug and the pharmaceutical sales rep shows up with it the very next day. Or the auto insurance agent who gets a call from a family who just moved to town and needs immediate coverage and is told all their relatives have insurance from her agency. Or it's the financial planner who gets a call from a middle-aged couple wanting to set up a college fund for their grandchildren right away. You see, the list of easy sales could go on and on. The point is, with these prospects, you don't have to give much of a sales presentation to reach their Will Invest line. When you find them, your job is to close quickly. Now, the second Will Invest line is more of a typical sales situation, the kind you'll find yourself in most often. Here's where the prospect has to see a lot more need, use, and value before they say, yes, I'll invest. Time isn't indicated on this curve, because this can vary greatly based on your particular selling cycle. I mean, many products are sold on a one-call basis, in which it takes an hour or less before writing up a purchase agreement. This applies to many retail situations where the investment is rather small, or to direct contact situations where the need for the product is already clearly established. Pharmaceutical sales representatives calling on physicians typically have less than 2 minutes to make their entire sales presentation. The opposite of this would be the long selling cycle, 6 months or more, possibly because of the complexity of the product or the size of the investment. But even in long selling cycles, the closing curve still applies because the salesperson works on a series of smaller commitments or closes before reaching the final close. So when it comes to time, the Will Invest line can be reached in 2 minutes, 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, or in some cases even 2 years. Regardless of how long or short your cycle is, make sure your presentation has a clearly defined close, a decision to proceed to the next step. Yet when you look at or visualize the presentation curve, you're going to notice that eventually it goes back down. And once you pass their Will Invest line, the prospect won't invest. You've bought it back. No sale. Now, come on, be honest. Haven't you done that before? Well, I sure have. Talk, 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 and I talk myself right out of a sale. In a few minutes, we're going to discuss how to ensure that that won't happen again. Now, the third Will Invest line is higher than your sales presentation will reach. This prospect will say no, at least right now, regardless of how good your presentation is. Now, don't worry about them. They usually comprise only about 10% of the people you'll meet. So then 90% of your prospects might say yes if you make a good enough sales presentation and close effectively. Remember, as we said before, it would be foolish to say to yourself, I'll sell this person if it's the last thing I ever do. Because it might be. Accept the fact that some prospects simply will not invest in your product, period. And this is good. Remember, if everyone buys, then who needs you? Your company could just hire anyone to fill out orders. There's no easy way, only better ways to increase your closing percentage. And that's our goal, to give you new ideas or remind you of old ones that are going to help you improve. Now think of baseball for a minute. In the major leagues today, some baseball players earn huge salaries and get gigantic bonuses. Why? I mean, why would an owner pay such big money, $5 or $10 million a season or even more for a baseball player? Because it's good business. The owner earns back even more money because larger crowds come to the ballpark. Fans want to watch a professional. But consider the high level of performance necessary to earn the big dollars. Now, if you've already listened to the Build a Better You series, you heard these numbers. Remember them? You have two Major League Baseball players. One is a 250 hitter. That means he gets 3 hits out of every 12 times at bat. This average player might earn $1 million a year. The second player hits 333. That's 4 hits out of every 12 times at bat. His income could be $10 million a year or more. That's 10 times the average player's income. Is this second player 10 times better? Well, of course not. The average number of at-bats a game is 4. So in 3 games, each player would have an opportunity to hit 12 times. All the 333 hitter needs to do to earn 10 times more than the 250 hitter is get just one more hit, just one more every 3 games. It could be a bunt, a short fly, a grounder, anything that gets him on base. And the same is true of your selling career. You don't need to close 100% of your prospects. Just close one more sale out of every 12 presentations and do it consistently. Now back to the closing curve. It's pretty obvious that with Will Invest line number 1, your easy sale prospect, that any time you've passed their relatively low Will Invest line, they'll say yes. With your Will Invest line number 2, the typical prospect, it's also pretty obvious that when you've reached the Will Invest line, they too will say yes, as long as it's before the arching sales presentation curve starts heading down, below their Will Invest line. And finally, your Will Invest line number 3, the prospect you won't sell at all on that particular day. Now the vital question. When should you ask your prospect to make the decision to invest? Now think about it for a minute. When is the ideal time to ask them to invest? Well, yes, as soon as your sales presentation has crossed their Will Invest line. Well, there's just one slight problem, though. You don't know where your prospect's Will Invest line is. Hey, they don't sit down with you, take out a piece of paper, draw a curved arching line, point to a spot and say, hey, when you get right here in your sales presentation, you've reached my Will Invest line, and I'm going to say yes. Now, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it, if they did that? But there is a way to find out how close you are to the prospect's Will Invest line. It's a principle that the top sales professionals, those 1% club members, have known for years. The way you know where you are in relation to your prospect's Will Invest line is to keep closing throughout your presentation and gauging your prospect's responses. As you get closer to the Will Invest line, you're going to hear more positive responses from your prospect. You see, ordinary salespeople tend to stop their presentations just short of the Will Invest line. They tend to be frightened off by objections. But the professional closes throughout the presentation, realizing that any objection or a no only means they haven't reached the Will Invest line yet. Here's another way to understand the Will Invest line. Just visualize an electronic scale, the kind you see in most of the supermarkets. In this case, let's say you're in a gourmet candy store. You ask the salesperson or the clerk behind the counter for 2 pounds of those fancy jelly beans selling for $5 a pound. With a big smile and lots of willy-cooly enthusiasm, he opens the case, grabs a big scoop full of jelly beans, puts it on his scale. It reads about a pound. He presses his electronic billing keys and punches in 2 pounds at $5, $10. He smiles, hands you the bag of jelly beans, and says, that'll be $10. Well, how would you react? I mean, wouldn't you say, hey, no way am I going to give you $10. You've only given me 1 pound of jelly beans. Oh, then the clerk would say, gee, I'm so sorry, I didn't read it correctly. Reaches in, takes a few more jelly beans, and now let's say you have 1.5 pounds. The clerk looks at you again and says, okay, that'll be $10 for 2 pounds. Well, you'd say, hey, it's not worth it. Isn't that what happens in your prospect's mind as you explain the benefits of your product? The prospect mentally weighs the value of those benefits against the required investment. Now, in our jelly bean example, let's say the clerk adds some more jelly beans, and you carefully watch the scale, and it finally reads 2 pounds. So you've got exactly 2 pounds now, and the clerk says, that'll be $10. Well, now you'll gladly give him the $10. You've reached the Will Invest line. In almost every presentation, that's how your prospect's mind works, like a balance scale, weighing need, use, and value against the required investment. But what would have happened if the clerk left the 1.5 pounds on his scale and said, $10? No way, you'd say. And what if his response was, well, from my viewpoint, it's 2 pounds, and I'm not scooping up another jelly bean. Give me $10. What would you do then? Of course, you'd leave. No way would that low-value, 1.5 pound presentation reach your 2 pound Will Invest line. No sale there. But just because you walked out of the candy store, does it mean you didn't want the product? Oh, no. It just means the value wasn't there. But let's say this clerk was trained by Memphis cab driver Willie Cooley, and he scoops up 2¼ pounds of jelly beans and says, oops, my mistake, but you can have the 2¼ pounds for $10. No charge for the extra jelly beans. Wow, now you'd feel you got a bargain. He promised a lot, delivered even more. Plus, you'll come back again. Now, whether you're buying a car, an air conditioner, a computer, a new suit, investing in a piece of property, or buying insurance, you usually weigh the need, use, and value on your mental scale. The closing curve illustrates the fact that different prospects have different values. And you've noticed that, haven't you? I mean, you take the same product and the same well-organized sales presentation, and yet some prospects will decide quickly, and others are going to take a lot longer. Remember, the closing curve has no time built into it. Here's another true story, which illustrates the need to close early in order to find the Will Invest line and not buy your product back. A friend of mine named Dave was driving down Camelback Road in Phoenix some years ago. He pulled into a luxury car dealership, jumped out of his car, rushed into the showroom. Now, the salesperson in the showroom greeted him with a big smile. I mean, he figured Dave was a prospect. Dave quickly explained that he had come in to see if he could use their men's room and make a quick local telephone call. The salesperson was very nice and said, sure, go ahead. Well, a few minutes later, Dave had taken care of his needs and was walking towards the door when the salesperson stopped Dave and said, maybe you can help me now. And Dave said, well, sure, what's up? The salesperson introduced himself, got Dave's first name, and said, you know, when people visit our showroom, Dave, we like to ask them for an opinion. We've just gotten our new models, and we're taking a little consumer poll. He then walked over to a beautiful silver sports car with leather interior, opened up the door, and motioned for Dave to sit in it. Well, he did. He asked Dave how he felt, and Dave said, wow, this is luxurious. It's even more comfortable than the couch in my living room. Well, the salesperson responded, you know, if you think that's comfortable, you ought to test drive it. Why don't you just drive one around the block for a minute? Well, you're kidding, Dave said. No, go ahead. It's all right. I'll go with you. And with that, the salesperson got the keys to the demonstration model in the parking lot. Dave drove the car around the block, and a few minutes later, they were back at the dealership. The salesperson said, well, how did it handle? Grinning from ear to ear, still sitting in the car, Dave said, oh, I've never driven a car like this. This is the most amazing automobile I've ever been in. The salesperson smiled, too, and said, it's the kind of car you've always dreamed of having, isn't it? Dave said, oh, yeah, it sure is. With that, the salesperson took out a little folder containing some sample stick-on letters. Then he leaned over to Dave and said, you know, when somebody invests in one of these new models from our dealership, we put their initials on the glove compartment door, and we have them available in different styles. Which one do you think would look best on your new car? Dave looked at the choices and said, well, you know, I think this one looks really nice. Then out came a purchase agreement, and the salesperson said, okay, Dave, what would those initials be? D and D-E, Dave said, without hesitation. Okay, Dave, now how do you spell your last name? E-V-E-R-E-T-T. And with that, Dave Everett invested in a brand new silver sports coupe. Now, what happened here? Dave had reached the Will Invest line, and the salesperson knew it. So when your prospect reaches the Will Invest line, what should you do? Stop selling and close. Think about it. That whole presentation took only a few minutes. No statistics on miles per gallon, the horsepower, the 0-60 acceleration, warranties, videos, or brochures. The salesperson didn't even open up the hood. Dave simply fell in love with the car and bought it. Now, that story is hard to believe, isn't it? But it's absolutely true. Dave Everett told me about it himself. In fact, a few years later, Dave told me the rest of the story. He realized that after he'd owned that car for a while, it really was the car he'd always dreamed of. Every time he had heard an advertisement for one or seen one on the street, he thought, oh, man, would I like a car like that. Someday I'm going to own one. Now, maybe he was directed into that dealership by some of those subconscious thoughts. I mean, we'll never know. Are some of your prospects pre-sold like Dave was? And have you ever talked too long explaining your product when your prospect was already sold? Remember Dave's experience. And remember to ask yourself those two vital questions. Am I using that idea? And how can I improve upon it? So don't oversell your product. Close early. In fact, you should close the sale as quickly as you can. Settle all the details. Get the agreement okayed. And then put all of that aside. Congratulate your prospect on their wonderful investment. And then when that's all done, explain any additional features and benefits that are going to help them maximize the use of the product. Yes, being a good closer is so important, But you know, without a solid sales presentation, closing ability alone won't make you a sales professional. As you already know, if you try to close a sale by forcing it, buyer's remorse will set in, and the sale or the order might be canceled or the product returned. So the main reason to continue your presentation after the sale is to prevent buyer's remorse and to implement Willie Cooley's idea of promise a lot, deliver even more. That way, you'll make sure your prospect is really thrilled, especially one of those prospects with a very low will invest line. This happened to me back in 1996 when I was selling one of my boats. I had just had a new Sunset bass boat, custom built, and was selling my older one. It's a specially built fishing boat for use on the big waters of Lake Powell in Utah. And it's a very special boat with a very limited prospect base. A few months after putting an ad in our local boat trader magazine and receiving only a few calls from curious but not serious enough prospects, a guy called me on the phone and said, "I want your boat." Now, does that sound like a good prospect to you? Oh, very good, of course. And after a brief discussion and a funnel qualifying presentation, it was obvious he was serious. Now, how did I know he was serious? Because he said, "I'll give you a check today. When can I pick up the boat?" Now, you might be thinking again to yourself, "Now, come on, Joel. No one buys a boat on the phone sight unseen." Well, this guy did, and I wasn't about to stop him. You see, that's something it took me many years to learn. Let people buy the way they want to buy. The prospect is the only one who knows what the whole story is. That's why when you began listening to this series of messages, you heard me say, and you've heard me continue to say, that one of the best ways to learn how to sell is when you're the prospect. Because that's the only time you know exactly what the prospect is thinking and feeling, because the prospect is you. So back to that Sunset bass fishing boat story. You come along with me as my invisible partner. Now, the guy who called, John Allen, he was a local home builder, and I agree on the price, subject to the boat being in the condition I said it was in. And, of course, I knew it was. Well, when John sees the boat for the first time, he's just overjoyed. It's exactly what he wanted. In fact, he had been wanting a Sunset boat for years. He had seen the Fish and Game Department Sunset out on Lake Patrol. He had ridden in a few others. These were owned by professional bass fishermen. Well, I had a bill of sale all made out for him. He looked it over, signed it, and gave me a cashier's check for the agreed-on amount. One easy sale. Anyone could have sold that boat to that man. He had a low will invest line, and I had the only used, excellent condition Sunset bass boat for sale in Arizona. Now, on that bill of sale, I had written all the basic equipment that came with the boat, and I had added the word subject to lake test. So why did I close the sale before the lake test? Well, it's a selling fact of life. Once your prospect buys something, they look for ways to justify and reinforce in their own mind that they made the right decision. Don't you do that when you buy something? So now that John Allen's decision was made, all I had to do was prove that what I promised was true. And of course, I knew I could do that, because he didn't know the surprises that awaited him. Remember Willie's lesson to us, promise a lot, deliver even more? Well, you can probably guess what happened at the lake. The prospect, now the customer, was thrilled. The power he felt when he put that 300-horsepower C-drive outboard engine to the test on a 20-foot bass boat, the amazing smooth ride, the room, all of which he'd expected, and he was very pleased with. Then I went back to the presentation and showed him the extras. That's right, the extra hidden storage spaces and additional equipment that he was getting that wasn't even in the ad. And by the time we got back to the dock, he was so thrilled. Plus, I felt so good that he was so happy. You know, selling is really a win-win. So think about what you can add to your presentation after the sale is closed to thrill your prospect. Especially with those easy sales, where you didn't have to develop a lot of need, use, and value. And remember, to use your own personal experiences to study the effects of great closes you meet, as well as the frustration of dealing with the non-closes, like Ray, the air conditioning salesperson, who just completely missed building block number 9, the action step. Now, let's see how the building block concept applies to the sale of my boat to John Allen. First, preparation, the foundation. Well, yes, I was prepared and ready to sell. But what about the next 8 building blocks? Pre-approach, approach, attention, interest, conviction, desire, and resolve to invest now. Yes, all those steps were complete. They were done by John Allen, the prospect, not me, the salesperson. And once those building blocks are in place, what do? Yes, you close. Building block 9, the action step, which then results in building block 10, the sale. Yes, sometimes it can happen just that fast. Either you've placed the building blocks on the foundation or your prospect does. It doesn't matter. Your job is to know where you are in the presentation. And when building blocks 1 through 8 are in place, you close. Call for action. And you'll see your closing average get better. You know, on a visit to the San Diego area one time, I found an article in the local newspaper about a salesman who, though called superseller, had one of the worst closing averages I had ever heard of. 7%. I mean, that's pretty bad. Remember in message number 3, we discussed your CPC, commission per contact. Well, this guy's CPC was so low, I mean, it had to be with a 7% closing ratio. Yet, why was his picture featured along with a half-page article in the newspaper? The headline said, 2,303 tickets sold. The salesman, a 16-year-old Claremont Boy Scout named Glenn Boyer, who in a 7-week sales effort sold 2,303 $1 tickets to his Boy Scout fair. In the article, it described how the average scout sold 20 tickets a year. Now, Glenn isn't in the top 1% club. He's not a sales professional. He doesn't have a great presentation. He doesn't even know much about the selling process. But if there was a sales persistence club, I imagine Glenn could be its president. Here's what Glenn said. Here, let me read it to you. When I go door to door, 1 out of 10 buys. Storefronts are easier. They come to me, but I sell only 1 out of 20 that way. It seems when I go to them, I sell twice as many. So I go into neighborhoods, but I avoid the hilly neighborhoods or places like La Jolla where the houses are too big and too far apart. Hey, this young man sure knew how to size up his market and where best to put his effort. And effort is sure one part of why you're hearing this story. Glenn says he uses no special convincing sales presentation to help him sell. His key is just plain old hard work. Kind of reminds me of some of those old 19th century gold prospectors we talked about earlier. Except Glenn didn't give up or strike the mother lode. He just kept on seeing people, 30,000 people, in that 7-week period. How can a young man have such persistence? Well, he said in that newspaper article, and he said it quite humbly. Let me quote it. I think the scout fair is very important. So, my listening friend, how important is what you're selling? You know, you won't close many sales unless you do what Glenn Boyer did, see the people. It's getting yourself in front of as many prospects as possible. And even without the greatest sales presentation in the world, you can still be successful. I mean, think about it. If the ordinary scout sold 20 tickets and Glenn sold over 2,300 tickets, then he was 111 times more successful. His presentation surely wasn't 111 times better. How much above ordinary do you want to be in your sales career? Well, think about stories like this. It gives you inspiration, self-motivation, and a greater insight into the art and science of selling. Now, since our subject in this session has been closing, and you heard about Ray, the air conditioning salesperson, Dave Everett in the car sale, and how I sold my Sunset Bass boat to John Allen, how about closing when you don't see anybody? Like selling and closing through impersonal means, like on the web, or through email, faxes, advertising in magazines, newspapers, or trade journals, or by direct mail. Now, there's about the lowest closing percentage vehicle ever devised by mankind. How many pieces of direct mail ads do you get at home? I mean, from every sort of company, attempting to sell you computers, wireless phone service, cable or satellite service, cars, clothing, collectibles, cordless drills, and lots of other stuff. Well, I usually don't have time to read this direct mail stuff, but sometimes something catches my eye. Remember that building block number 3, attention? Well, for some reason, this letter got my attention, and I saved it. Because in a one-page letter, it got me to buy. I sent my money in, and I still have the product years later. Now, I'm going to read you this letter, minus a few of the words, like the company name. Now, the reason I saved this letter is simple. It got me to buy, and I enjoy studying why I buy, just like I hope you're going to be doing on a regular basis. Now, about 2 years after I got that letter, and they closed the sale with me, I read an article in a trade publication about direct mail selling and why it's still used in this world of high-tech communications. Because the article said direct mail still works, just by sheer volume. Just like Glenn Boyer's 30,000 prospect contacts made it work, even with his terrible 7% closing percentage. And that's what this article pointed out. Yes, the direct mail closing percentage is very low, but if your volume is high, bingo, lots of sales. And as an example of this, they showed a one-page letter that had won an award for pulling one of the highest returns or closing percentages on record. It was the same exact letter that got me to buy. So, would you like me to read you this letter? Good. Now, it's on a very impressive letterhead. No photos, no graphics, just a bold one-sentence headline. Six brief paragraphs, a signature, and a P.S. Okay, here's the headline. 1 million diamond-inlaid wristwatches in this mammoth publicity campaign. Oh, and at the very bottom, in just as bold a print, is the price. It says, for only $3 a piece. Yes, $3. Like in 1, 2, 3. $3. Like 12 quarters, 30 dimes. $3. Now, how are you doing on your Will Invest line? Are you an easy sale and ready to buy? Or are you a typical sale? Or no sale? Would you send in your $3 for the watch? Well, as I told you, I did. Now, you're probably saying, okay, that does it, Joel. You're a total card-carrying nut. You buy a ski lake in the desert. You write number 5 on your all-time list of most important people in your life, and it's a taxi driver. You buy a dozen shirts without even knowing the price, and now you fall for some direct mail scam for a $3 watch? Well, okay, nutcase Weldon. I'll be like Johnny Chan and let you play out this hand. Go ahead. I'll listen a little more. Why, oh why, would you buy that stupid watch? Well, that's a good question. Glad you're still hanging in there with me, because when you hear the letter, you'll know part of the reason. Okay, here's the letter. Your name has been selected by computer as one of 1 million persons eligible to receive a diamond inlaid wristwatch as part of a nationwide publicity campaign. These are the same diamond inlaid designer wristwatches being nationally advertised in leading media throughout America. The face of each watch is distinctively set and inlaid with a genuine 17-facet, 25-hundredths of a point solitaire diamond. Each watch is a precision timepiece with a genuine quartz movement that is so powerful it never needs winding and is accurate to within seconds per month. It is astonishingly lightweight, elegantly slim in profile, and available in both men's and ladies' models. Then a few more features and benefits follow, and then the close. To obtain one at this special publicity price, mail the enclosed response form no later than midnight, September 21st. Sincerely. And then it's signed by this guy. P.S. Promptness bonus. And it says in big bold print, for only $3 a piece. No, the shipping and the handling wasn't $1,000 or $100 or even $10. It was just a couple of bucks. Now, as we're talking, the watch is right in front of me. And yes, it's everything the letter said it would be. It's also a piece of worthless junk. It looks a little poorer in quality than the kind of prizes you used to get in a Cracker Jack box. Now, you wouldn't give it to a 6-year-old child to play with. It would just bore them. It's a zero. It's nothing. It's worthless. So why did I save it along with that letter? To remind me and you of some vital selling principles. Number one, you get what you pay for. Okay, the watch is a piece of junk, but it did work, and I guess it was worth maybe $3. Number two, words create pictures. Great words create great pictures. How good are your words to create images in your prospect's mind? Number three, people will buy based on just low price alone. Even if their instincts, judgment, and common sense say otherwise, if the price is so low compared to yours, people might buy. So part of your selling presentation should include this and anticipate that. Yes, someone, somewhere will sell for less. And as a sales pro, you need to prepare your prospects by selling the value you deliver, not just the price. Now, of course, the company who sold those watches wasn't in the watch business. You and I both know that. They were in the list business. They sold the names of people who buy through the mail. And even if they gave you the watch for free, they would have made a profit from the names. Lists of direct mail buyers are priceless to mail order companies and direct mail solicitors. So for $3, the Weldon family got a lot of laughs. And hey, It's one more story to illustrate a principle of selling. In this case, three principles. Now, this next illustration is a lot different. It's about a first-class, top 1% club member by the name of Chris Schief, a great sales pro. Now, this story goes back to 1971. You might not have even been born yet, but Chris was. He had just gotten a job in Scottsdale, Arizona, selling for a home builder. So he loaded up a U-Haul and headed out from Seattle with his wife Sharon and their two-year-old toddler to sell new homes in this company's first Arizona subdivision called Little Tree Homes. Now, there were just a few problems. Well, there were six big problems, to be exact. No models, no phone in his construction trailer on the site, no access to the property by the public, no friends or contacts in Arizona, no money, well, he did have his life savings of $400, and oh yes, no real sales experience. Now, what would you have done? I'm sure in your selling situation, you have some challenges, some difficulties, and some conditions you just don't like. But most likely, you're not in as bad a shape as Chris was in. Well, when you're in a tough spot, and you're a worker, a doer, and an action-type thinker like Chris, you just decide to find a way. Now, if you've ever shopped for a new home, you know that there are models to look at. There are site plans, drawings, photos of similar projects the builder has built. There was nothing like that for Chris Schief. No prospect could come to him, so he had to go to them. So knowing his prospects would come from the surrounding area, he set out gold calling, knocking on doors of apartment houses in the area with a set of plans under his arms. On the first contact, he would just prospect for potential new home buyers. And when he found them, he'd close for an appointment to let him show them the plans for this new subdivision coming right in their area. Now, how about in your selling? Do you need to divide your sales calls into different steps and then close for the next step? Well, since the models were going to take about 3 months to complete, he had a lot of time to prospect and present. And pretty soon, Chris was not only making presentations, he was making sales. Lots of sales. Now, we've talked about selling tangibles and intangibles. How about selling a tangible that you can't see? I mean, that's what this amazing creative sales pro did, writing up sales contracts that he called committed reservations. He wrote 12 in the first 2 weeks of presenting and dozens more in the 2 weeks after that. So many, in fact, he needed a new plan. Because how do you keep their interest above the will invest line over such a long period of time? This is where you might pick up a great idea. If you're selling something that takes time to be made or developed or to be delivered, keeping in touch with your prospect after they've committed and before you deliver it is so vital. Now, Chris's daily sales report to his company would read like this: prospect visits, zero. Sales made, four. Now, that's a sales manager's dream salesperson. End result, 11 months later, 153 homes sold, 28 were sold on the opening day of his models, all because Chris Schief made his lack of model homes a positive. He didn't allow himself to make excuses. What excuses have you allowed yourself to make about why you're not selling more? Is it your territory? Is it your limited inventory? Is it your price compared to a low-price competitor? Is it a sales manager who just doesn't like you? Is it a lack of new products, production delays, quality control problems, government regulations, red tape? I mean, hey, you can take just about any negative situation and do what Chris did. You can make a negative into a positive. And when you do, your sales will start to soar, and so will your career. And that's what happened to Chris Schief. 3 years later, he found himself as the sales manager of another, much larger home building company. And he hired me to help train his salespeople and overcome his next big career challenge. Now he had two subdivisions with models, but no marketing budget, five salespeople, and no traffic and no prospects. The economy was bad, gas was expensive, and his two subdivisions were located way outside of town. Now, how can you close if you don't present? And how can you present if you don't have any prospects? Problems can be real opportunities, as Chris had proved 3 years earlier. But how do you get these five retail salespeople to shift gears from sitting in a model home and being surprised by prospects to being creative salespeople and going out and surprising the prospects? Now, I had just begun my career putting on sales training seminars. This was my first year doing it. But I understood the 10-to-win concept. I knew the building blocks. I knew how to qualify. And most important, I understood the closing curve concept. When you have a clear picture of this powerful concept, you'll be able to see selling and closing in a whole different light. So as I stood before Chris and his five salespeople on a sunny day in Phoenix, Arizona, in 1974, my presentation was built on the 10 building blocks and units of conviction and getting them to go out and make gold calls and not wait for the prospects to find them. Well, that last idea didn't go over very well. My students were not very excited. As a matter of fact, they hated the idea. So adding more value was needed. An hour or so into my presentation, we took a break. And then I said, hey, let's go out and see if what we're talking about really works. Well, whatever, was their collective response. So the seven of us walked across the street from their office and headed to an apartment complex. Who wants to go first, I said. Well, you know the answer, no one. So I said, okay, you all stand behind me and I'll go and knock on that first door. Knock, knock. A woman opens the door, looks at the seven of us and says, what's up? So I give my little presentation about the homes, the models, the great location outside of the city, and then I close for any interest. There was none. Okay, I say, do you have anything for me? Oh, yes, she says, and she hands me three crisp $1 bills. Thank you, I say, and make it a great day, and we leave. Chris then says as we're walking down to the next apartment, hey, let me go next. Same approach, same not interested, and then he asks, okay, do you have anything for me? Oh, yes, the guy says, and hands Chris three crisp $1 bills. By now, the five salespeople feel like they're in the Twilight Zone or on candid camera. So one brave saleswoman says, let me go next. She stumbles through the presentation, and the same thing happens. She's given $3. At the next door, no interest, and again, she gets $3. We did this at every door in the complex. And wherever somebody was home, the salesperson got $3 in less than a minute. I mean, they just couldn't believe it. So we went back to their office with five very confused and amazed salespeople. Next came the second part of my presentation, telling them not to forget those $3 gifts as I began presenting the idea of the commission per contact that you heard in message number three, it takes 10 to win. I explained the idea that their $300 average commission on a new home sale was really a payment for the 1 out of 5 closing ratio they had. In other words, $60 a sales presentation. And so if they just went to, let's say, apartment houses where people rented and asked 100 apartment dwellers if they had thought about buying a home, if even 1 out of 100 would actually become a home buyer, they would still earn $3 just for knocking on each of those 100 doors. After that, they paid a lot more attention to Chris when he told them about his sales success 3 years earlier and how excited he was as a salesperson to go out and find his own prospects rather than waiting for them to find him. Now, of course, you probably already figured out what happened to that apartment complex. Chris and I had gone out the day before. With a few $100 in new dollar bills, we had visited everyone who was home, explained our plan for the next day, and asked their help in teaching this important lesson to Chris's people the next day. Each of them was given $6 and told, you keep three and give us back three when we knock on your door. Make the short qualifying presentation and ask, do you have anything for me? Well, most of them loved the idea. And of course, a few didn't, so we just avoided them the next day. The rest of the story is simple, that to a person, those five salespeople became prospectors and in a short time generated enough traffic to sell out both of those subdivisions. Chris was a hero to his company and got lots of offers to advance his career. From a guy with $400 to his name and a pile of dirt, Chris Schief became a successful sales pro, sales manager, and eventually part owner of one of Arizona's largest home building companies. And as the 21st century began, he sold that company for a huge profit and started another one. Chris is a very grateful man for all his blessings. But you know what? He earned every penny of it. Because as a young sales pro, he sold what he had the best way he could. And then he kept his prospects' interest high enough so it wouldn't drop below that will invest line. Now, why did I tell you this story? To get you to go out knocking on doors in apartment complexes? Of course not. But remember how we discussed the difference between principles and specifics. It's important to identify the principle here, the principle of CPC, commission per contact, and the story will help you remember that principle. Your assignment now is to make it specific to you. As you go out and sell, why not pay yourself a CPC for every direct prospect contact you make? You can extend that principle even further and pay yourself a CPC, a commission per close. And if you're not making enough presentations, then take the initiative. Be creative like Chris Schief. Do whatever it's going to take. How about for the next 30 days, keep track of which will invest line each of your prospects had? How many easy sales did you close? How many typical sales did you close? How many no sales today did you run into? You know, that could be a very profitable exercise for you. Take the principle and make it specific to you. Remember to close early and close often. And then you'll know when you reach your prospect's will invest line. And you're going to make a lot more sales. And you'll be selling it with the $1 million attitude.